Okay, let's turn in our Bibles to 1 Kings 2, 13 through 46. We're going to see if we get through this entire remainder of chapter 2 tonight. And the reason being is that it's all connected to the same because it's overcoming and eliminating these enemies. I've entitled this, "Does the Violence of Solomon Disturb You?" There are a lot of people nowadays, professing Christians, in evangelicalism today and that this is very disturbing to them because this is killing and this type of thing that's going on here. And these people, you know, will divide the God of the Old Testament from the God of the New Testament. Exodus 15:3, the God of the Old Testament is the God of war, you know, and wrath and that anger and killing. But the God of the New Testament is the God of love. And my response to them always is go to the book of Revelation, because the book of Revelation has a twofold theme. It's worship and it's the wrath of God. The wrath of God. Lots of killing in Revelation in the New Testament. The theme is Solomon's kingship and kingdom was of God. And this is where, when we question there the title and that, this is what we always have to remember is that Solomon was God's appointed king, and he's in the Davidic line, and this is in the context, these are the means God's used to his sovereign end. This is his kingdom that's being supported here above all, and so hopefully that will be emphasized and comes out in our study tonight. Now, key enemies to be eliminated. Essentially, this is an outline. We've got Adonijah, verse 13:25. Remember, the half-brother of Solomon. He's number 4 in the lineup. He's the only one that's of the first three are already dead. And so you've got the fourth here that's basically copies Absalom, the third one. And he wants to usurp the kingship, remember, for himself. Abiathar, the priest, he sided with Adonijah in the coup. And so that's verse 26-27. Joab, you know, the general, and he sided with Adonijah in the coup also, verse 28-35. And Shammai, remember when Absalom in 2 Samuel 15-18 drove David from Jerusalem, they crossed over the Kidron Valley and were heading Transjordan. Shammai was the one that came along and was cursing and throwing stones at David and his men. And it's interesting that Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, and so was Shimei of the tribe of Benjamin. That's important to remember. Chapter 1, the key is succession. Succession. Remember the saying we've said is, we'll refer to this a lot of times, the garment is weakest at its seams. Meaning that when you have a transition, a change of rulership, there the old king dies, the young king comes in. A lot of times in Israel, you know, they were even as young as 6-7 years of age, sometimes like Uzziah, 16 years of age, and that teenagers. Well, that's the time, you know, you want to have a coup, and is that transition there? It tends to be weak. So the garment is weakest at its seams. Who would sit on the throne? That's the succession. See, who's going to sit on the throne? And remember in chapter 1, we've heard to the theme 9 times. Hopefully you've got that highlighted in your Bible in chapter 1 there about the throne there 9 times. Chapter 2, the key is security. Will the kingdom stand? Will it be established? Will it endure? And 9 times, chapter 2, 24 to 46, you'll find the word died. I've highlighted that in my Bible also, in like chapter 1, I've highlighted on the throne. Died, mut, is 8 times the verb, and mewed is 1 time the noun. A lot of death. A lot of blood being shed here in the end of chapter 2. If the kingdom is to be secure, threats against it, if the kingdom would be secure or established, threats against it must be eliminated. We have to remember that. Very important. They must be eliminated. You can't have those adversaries milling around and creating an undercurrent and everything else. Kun, four times, verses 12 to 46. I've highlighted that also. Verse 12, Solomon sat on the throne of his father David. His kingdom was firmly established. The second time is in verse 24. Now, therefore, as the Lord lives, who has confirmed me and set me on the throne of David my father, and who has established a house for me, as he had promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today. And then at the verse 45, King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. Verse 46, so the king commanded Benaiah the son of Jehoiada. He went out, struck him down. He died. Thus the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Four times there. Four being a Jewish number of universalism. And verse 12 and verse 46 is an inclusio. An inclusio. The beginning and the end are the same. It just kind of wraps it, ties it all together as a unit. An inclusio. Verse 12 and verse 46. 2 Samuel, the Davidic covenant. Turn in your Bible there. Remember, Solomon said his throne was based on the promise of God. 2 Samuel chapter 7, the Davidic covenant. Oh, I'm in 1 Samuel. No wonder it looks strange. 2 Samuel 7. Verse 12, when your days are fulfilled and you rest with your fathers, I will set up your seed after you, who will come from your body, and I will, what? Establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom. I will be his father, he shall be my son. If he commits iniquity, I will chasten him with the rod of men, with the blows of the sons of men, but my mercy shall not depart from him as I took it from Saul, whom I removed from before you, and your house and your kingdom shall be established forever before you, your throne shall be established forever, according to all these words, according to all his visions. So Nathan spoke to David. Four times there, established, and you see it uses that same language there in 1 Kings 2 on purpose, on purpose. So that tells us again, this God is over all of the events here that is happening. He's in control of all things. He's over the means as well as the ends. He's sovereign over it all. Okay, I think what we'll do is we'll take, and because this is quite a bit, we'll just take one section at a time here. So let's begin with Adonijah. But does this have relevance for us today? And I think of President Trump's presidency, 8 years, you know, he had President 45th, and then in between the 4 years, and now 4 years again. But think of the adversaries there during that time and how they wanted to overthrow what was established there, and they're working on it. And I hope those people that promoted all of those dossier and all those falsehoods, I hope they're going to be punished. Looks like there may be that coming now against Comey and Brennan, some of those people. So we'll see. But just imagine what he's had to put up with for that. From enemies or adversaries, you see, that were not eliminated, but were still in the cabinet and etc. It's come out now that even the vice president and the head of the house were conniving also against him. It's interesting, even within the last 10 days, on EPA, there were 278 people employed and formerly employed that signed a letter against Trump's energy policies. They were green energy people. And Lee Zeldin is the head of the EPA. 144 of them out of the 278 were still employed, so he fired them all. He get rid of them because all they do is undercut the policy in the cabinet. So keep that in mind, things like that, the relevancy of it here and what Solomon is doing. If the kingdom is to be established, the threats against it must, divine necessity, must be eliminated. So let's read 1 Kings 2, 13 through 25 here first. Come, please, let me now give you advice that you may save your own life and the life of your son Solomon. Wait, chapter 2, I'm in the wrong chapter here. Go ahead. Chapter 2, verse 12. Then Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, so she said, Do you come peaceably? And he said, Peaceably. Moreover, he said, I have something to say to you. And she said, Say it. Then he said, You know that the kingdom was mine, and all Israel had set their expectations on me, that I should reign. However, the kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. Now I ask one petition of you, do not deny me. And she said to him, Say it. Then he said, Please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you, that he give me Abishag the Shunammite as wife. So Bathsheba said, Very well, I will speak for you to the king. Bathsheba therefore went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonijah. And the king rose up to meet her, bowed down to her, sat down on his throne, and had a throne set for the king's mother. So she sat at his right hand. Then she said, I desire one small petition of you. Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, Ask it, my mother, for I will not refuse you. So she said, Let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah your brother as wife. King Solomon answered and said to his mother, Now why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also. For he is my older brother, for him and for Abiathar the priest and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, May God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has confirmed me, and set me on the throne of David my father, and who has established a house for me as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today. So King Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, he struck him down, and he died. Okay, let's go back here to verse 1. Adonijah, remember the leniency of Solomon here when he became king to Adonijah. If Adonijah would have become king, Solomon would have been dead. He would have been dead immediately. What did Solomon do in turn to Adonijah? Look at, again, just refresh our memory. Look back at chapter 1, verse 50 to 53. Now, Adonijah was afraid. There was a verse, was afraid there three times in verse 49, 50, and 51. Adonijah was afraid of Solomon, so he rose, he went, took hold of the horns of the altar. And it was told Solomon, saying, Indeed, Adonijah is afraid of King Solomon, for look, he's taken hold of the horns of the altar, saying, Let King Solomon swear to me today that he will not put his servant to death with the sword. That's exactly what he would have done to Solomon. Then Solomon said, If, here's mercy, if he proves himself a worthy man, not one hair of him shall fall to the earth, but if wickedness is found in him, he shall die. There's the ultimatum. So King Solomon sent them to bring him down from the altar. He came, fell down before King Solomon, and Solomon said, Go to your house. Just think of the leniency, the mercy of Solomon there. So here's what Adonijah does, and it says, and this is a potential coup again here. Adonijah is a man of pride, arrogance. So he goes in to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. She said, Do you come peaceably? And he said, Peaceably, not really. That's just outwardly he says that. Moreover, he said, I have something to say to you. She said, Say it. Then he said, You know that the kingdom I've circled here, mine, that all of Israel set their expectations on me, I circled that, that I should, I should reign. You see, his focus, his arrogance, his pride is still there. And of course, where did he get that it was mine and me and I should reign, when he admits at the bottom of verse 15, the kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord, you see. And he knew that. Let's read it again. Turn your Bible to 1 Chronicles 22, verse First Chronicles 22, this is a backdrop here to chapters 1 and 2, verses 8 through 10. 8 through 10. 1 Chronicles 22, 8 through 10. But the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "You have shed much blood and have made great wars." Speaking of David here. "You shall not build a house for my name, because you have shed much blood on the earth in my sight. Behold, a son shall be born to you, shall be a man of rest or peace. And I will give him rest or peace from all his enemies all around. His name shall be Solomon." Solomon. Literally peaceful. "For I give peace and quietness to Israel in his days. He shall build a house for my name, and he shall be my son. I will be his father. I will establish," there we go again, "the throne of his kingdom over Israel forever." And Adonijah knew that, as we said. The whole court knew that. And yet, you see, he shook his fist at God and wanted his own way instead. Now, verse 16, "Now I ask one petition of you, do not deny me." And she said, "Let's say it." And she said, he said, "Please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you." Now, we're going to read that he set up a throne for his mother. She has a lot of power, a lot of power. A lot of times when you read kings, they'll mention the mothers. And the reason being, a lot of times, you know, the kings had harems and a lot of concubines besides. And so the mother had a lot of influence on the son. He says, "Please give me Abishag the Shunammite as wife." So Bathsheba said, "Very well, I will speak to the king for you." Now, does Bathsheba, the question here is, does Bathsheba know what's going on? Is she just a pawn here in this thing where she doesn't really realize what Adonijah is asking here? So she's just going to deliver the petition? Or does she realize immediately that what his intention is? I think she's smart. I think she realizes immediately what he's asking. If he marries Abishag, now his folly here is sex. Remember, she's the most beautiful woman in the whole kingdom. So he wants her. Okay. And power. Now, why do you say if he has that, there's power? Is let's look at some cross references here. 2 Samuel 3:7. Okay, 2 Samuel 3:7. "And Saul had a concubine, whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. So Ishbosheth, who was a member of the son of Saul, remaining son, and Saul was dead. So he says to Abner, who was the commander of the army, 'Why have you gone in to my father's concubine?' And Abner knew," verse 8, "what the problem was. He got angry. 'Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I show loyalty to the house of Saul, your father,' etc." Ishbosheth accused him of what? To make a coup there and to take the kingdom from him. Look at 12:8. 12:8. 12:8. "Nathan said to David," verse 7, "'You are the man. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel. I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping, and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. If that had been too little, I'd also have given you much more.'" You see, that's the evidence that the kingdom is David's. 16:21. "And Ahithophel said to Absalom, 'Go into your father's concubines, whom he has left," the 10 concubines, "whom he has left to keep the house." Remember, David had fled now. He's going across the Kidron Valley, going east over Transjordan. He's fleeing from Absalom. "Go into your father's concubines, whom he's left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you are abhorred by your father. Then the hands of all who are with you will be strong." You see, he's usurping the kingdom there. So that's why I contend Bathsheba knew exactly what was going on here. But what she does is she goes in, and I contend even she knows what Absalom's response is going to be, and she knows the result of this ahead of time for Adonijah. So Bathsheba, therefore, verse 19, went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonijah, and the king rose up to meet her, bowed down to her, reverence, respect for his mother. He sat down on his throne. He's in session. He's going to rule at a throne set for his king's mother, like a co-regent here. So she sat at his right hand, the hand of honor, dignity. Then she said, I desire one small petition of you. Yeah, wasn't exactly small, was it? Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, ask it, my mother, for I will not refuse you. So she said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, his wife. Now, we do not have the audible here, how Solomon responded, but I can assure you here, he's responding in instant rage. Instant anger. Now, why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also. See? Might as well give him the kingship then, and I'm dead. See? Turn it over to him. He's my older brother, and then what does he do? Right away he goes in, and for Abiathar the priest and Joab the son of Zeruiah. You see the whole group then, and he didn't mention Shammai there, but the group that's involved there as far as the coup. Knew exactly what was going on. And this was, well, the text that I read, this was known custom in that time, occurrences that had occurred before, and Bathsheba knew this too. Verse 23, then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, may God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. Remember where at the first place I remember hearing that before was from Jezebel in 1 Kings 19:2, talking about Elijah. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them, the prophets of Baal that Elijah had killed, by tomorrow about this time. See. So now, verse 24, now therefore, as the Lord lives, now that means, again, that's his sovereignty over all things. Sovereignty over all things. Who has confirmed me and set me on the throne of David my father. He knows 1 Chronicles 22:8 through 10. He was told that by his father David, that he would be in the covenant and the throne would be his, and who has established a house for me, and as he promised. God is faithful to his promises. God will always perform what he has said. 1 Thessalonians 5:24. Faithful is he who promised, who also will do it. So there, Pastor Ryan, we have a cross reference there when we get to 1 Thessalonians 5:24. Okay. God is faithful to his promises, to his word. God said it, that settles it. And just think, what does he do? Solomon here attributes God there over all things. Psalm 57:2, I will cry unto God Most High, who performs all things for me. Or as Job said of God in Job 23:14, he performs what is appointed for me. God performs what is appointed for me. He does that for each one of us. He's over all things. So King Solomon, sent by the hand of Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, struck him down and he died. So immediate death then. Immediate death. One enemy eliminated. Let's go on to the second one. Verse 26 and 27. Abiathar the priest. And to Abiathar the priest, the king said, go to Anathoth, to your own fields. For you are deserving of death, but I will not put you to death at this time, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before my father David, because you were afflicted every time my father was afflicted. So Solomon removed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, and we'll find out he put Zadok, as of course from chapter 1. He was in the group that was not invited, remember, by Adonijah to the celebration of his kingship, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spoke concerning the house of Eli at Shiloh. Eli at Shiloh. So In 1 Samuel 2, you read about the house of Eli, and they were cut off, remember, because of the sin of Eli. What was the sin of Eli? Anybody remember? Hophni and Phinehas were his two sons. Remember? They had sinned before the Lord's house there and that, and Eli did not rebuke them. And because he did not rebuke them for their sin, the Lord cut off the house of Eli forever. Well, Abiathar, you see, he's being cut off here too. He's being replaced here by Zadok. And does anybody remember where Anathoth? Have you heard of Anathoth before? Small town north of Jerusalem. It was the home of who? Anybody remember Old Testament? What if I said the weeping prophet? Who's the weeping prophet? Jeremiah. Anathoth. And Jeremiah, remember, bought a property in Anathoth. That's where his relatives were. Well, Anathoth was a little town conclave of priests. So Jeremiah was of the priests. Anathoth was his hometown. Now, he's banished. He's shown mercy. He's not executed. Why? The reason's given there. Because, you see, he carried the ephod for David. And when David was running from Saul and all of that, Abiathar, you see, went through all of the affliction there with his father through the Absalom time and all of that. So he was faithful then. But here, for some reason, his folly, I put here earth over ephod. He knew. It puzzles me. He knew that Solomon was chosen to be the king. And yet, what did he do? He went with what seemed the power at the time, and he picked earthly security over God. He's banished. Yeah, we have no record of it. That's right. There's a veiled threat there. That's right. Yeah, that's right. At this time. Yeah. And we'll run into that. Remember that, because we'll run into that with Shammai. Same thing with him. Okay. Third one. Third enemy is Joab, verses 28 to 35. 28 to 35. Then news came to Joab, for Joab had defected to Adonijah, though he had not defected to Absalom. So Joab fled to the tabernacle of the Lord, took hold of the horns of the altar. We already ran into that. Who else took hold of the horns of the altar? Chapter 1, 50 and 51, Adonijah had done that. And of course, they're calling on the Lord for mercy, that Solomon would be merciful. King Solomon was told, Joab had fled to the tabernacle of the Lord. There he is by the altar. Then Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Joiada, saying, go strike him down. Now, Benaiah went to the tabernacle of the Lord and said to him, thus says the king, come out. And he said, no, but I will die here. And Benaiah brought back word to the king, saying, thus said Joab, and he answered me. Well, I'll keep reading here before we go through this. Then the king said to him, do as he said, strike him down, bury him, that you may take away from me and from the house of my father the innocent blood which Joab shed. So the Lord will return his blood on his head, because he struck down two men more righteous and better than he, and killed them with a sword, Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa, the son of Jether, the commander of the army of Judah, though my father David did not know it. Their blood shall therefore return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his descendants forever, but upon David and his descendants, upon his house and his throne, there shall be peace forever from the Lord. So Benaiah, the son of Joiada, went up, struck and killed him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. The king put Benaiah, the son of Joiada, in his place over the army, and the king put Zadok, the priest, in the place of Abiathar. Now, let's go through these verses here. 28, then news came to Joab. Joab had defected, though he had not defected to Absalom. Isn't it interesting here? He drew a contrast between the two. I would say the difference being is that he looked on David now as affirmed, very weak, and so that's why he went with Adonijah now instead of Absalom. David is still had strength there and was very active as far as his kingship yet. But remember when we went through chapter 1, David was aroused there. He may be weak physically, but he had a sharp mind. So he fled to the tabernacle of the Lord and took hold of the horns of the altar. Now he knew why. Turn in your Bible to Exodus 21, 12 through 14. Exodus 21, 12 through 14. Exodus 21, 12 through 14. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. However, if he did not lie in wait, but God delivered him into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place where he may flee. But if a man acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. So what does that tell you and I? Joab went and killed innocent blood in time of peace. David, remember, was making peace with Abner and Amasa and drawing all of Israel together, united. And David did not know what Joab did. He went and killed those two generals out of spite and for his own position. He didn't want anybody competing with him. And so he risked, you see, disrupting the whole unity of the kingdom that David was trying to establish. And so by going to the horns of the altar, you see, it was there for a place, yes, where you could get mercy, but you see, not when it was premeditated against a neighbor to kill him by treachery. So Benaiah showed up initially, and his reluctance, you see, was to shed the blood there in the tabernacle. And Solomon says, no, he shed innocent blood, premeditated, out of anger, violent rage, go kill him on the spot, then take him out, bury him, and you can clean it up afterwards. See, basically is what he's saying. King Solomon, verse 29, was told Joab had fled there, and he's by the altar. Solomon said, go strike him down. So Benaiah went to the tabernacle and said to him, thus says the king, come out. He refused. I will die here. He thought, you see, that he was safe there, that he would not be killed. His blood shed. And Benaiah was reluctant to kill him on the spot and shed blood in the tabernacle. And the king said, do as he said, strike him down and bury him, that you may take away from me in the house of my father the innocent blood which you shed. So you see, whatsoever you sow, you shall reap. This is justice here. This is divine justice being executed against Joab for shedding innocent blood in times of peace. Verse 33, their blood therefore shall return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his descendants forever. Divine justice, you see, is done. God's eternal, immutable commitment always to do what's right. So verse 34, he went and struck him and killed him, buried him in his own house in the wilderness, and the king put him then, the head of, in his place over the army, and the king put Zadok, the priest, in the place of Abiathar. Eliminated another enemy. Now, last enemy, Shimei, verse 36 to 46. Shimei. Then the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there. Do not go out from there anywhere. So this is like he was under house arrest. See, house arrest in Jerusalem. He was safe as long as he was there. For it shall be on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain you shall surely die. Your blood shall be on your own head. It's your own fault. Shimei said to the king, the saying is good, as my lord the king has said, so your servant will do. So Shimei dwelt in Jerusalem many days. Now it happened at the end of 3 years that two slaves of Shimei ran away to Achish, the son of Maachah, king of Gath, and they told Shimei, saying, look, your slaves are in Gath. So Shimei arose, saddled his donkey, went to Achish at Gath to seek his slaves. He went and brought his slaves from Gath. And Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and had come back. Then the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, "Did I not make you swear by the Lord and warn you, saying, 'Know for certain that on the day you go out and travel anywhere, you will surely die.' And you said to me, 'The word I have heard is good.' Why then have you not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I gave you?" The king said moreover to Shimei, "You know, as your heart acknowledges, all the wickedness that you did to my father David. Therefore the Lord will return your wickedness on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever." So the king commanded Benaiah the son of Jehoiada. He went out, struck him down, and he died. Thus the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Now, let's look at 2 Samuel 16. 2 Samuel 16, 5 through 13, and then 19, 18, second part of the verse through verse 23. Okay. This is background on Shimei then. 2 Samuel 16, verses 5 through 13. Now when King David came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul. See, he's a fellow Benjamite. This is important. Fellow Benjamite. Whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. Coming from there, he came out cursing continuously as he came. What I've done through this section is I've circled the word curse. Keeps repeating, repeating, repeating. And he threw stones at David and all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And Shimei thus said, when he cursed, "Come out, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you are caught in your own evil, because you are a bloodthirsty man." And Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, he'd be a younger brother of Joab, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please let me go over and take off his head." But the king said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David.' Who then will say, 'Why have you done so?'" And David said to Abishai and all his servants, "See how my son, who came from my own body, seeks my life. How much more now this Benjamite?" Same tribe as Saul. "Let him alone, let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered him. It may be that the Lord will look at my affliction, and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day." And as David and his men went along the road, Shimei went along the hillside opposite him, cursed as he went, threw stones at him, and kicked up dust. Now the king and all the people with him became weary, and they refreshed themselves there. Then let's look at 19. 2nd part of verse 18 and down through 23. Now Shimei the son of Gera fell down before the king. So now this is David now back on his throne, see? So what does Shimei do? He makes sure he's first one to David. Then he said to the king, "Do not let my lord impute iniquity in me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, and the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here am I, the first to come to you today, of all the house of Joseph, to go down to meet my lord the king." But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, "Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" And David said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today?" I circled today. Today. That doesn't mean tomorrow or 3 years hence. "Today in Israel, for do I not know that today I am king over Israel? Therefore, the king said to Shimei, 'You shall not die.'" And you could add, "Today." "And the Lord and the king swore to him." The king swore to him. Now, so he's under house arrest. It's interesting how Solomon shows him mercy. But remember this in 2, 1 through 9. It's like unfinished business. Unfinished business with these enemies. And what does David do? David turns it over to Solomon and he says, deal with it. This is interesting. Deal with these enemies. Deal with these enemies in your wisdom. John MacArthur defines wisdom as true wisdom from God is properly and effectively applying God's truths to everyday life, the skill in living righteously. Solomon, in executing this, was dealing righteously with these enemies under God. He was, really what he was doing was, you see, executing justice. He was executing justice, all under God's authority here. So Solomon says, on the day that you cross the brook Kidron, you leave Jerusalem, you see, know for certain you shall surely die. That same day, your blood will be on your own head. It's your own fault. Shimei said, well, this is a good saying. Good saying. So he dwelt in there many days. Well, he did. 3 years. Now, you know that I dislike when it says in this New Authorized Version, now it happened. Not happenstance. It came to pass. It came to pass. The predetermined counsel of God was now actualized. God is over all things that occur. Now it happened at the end of 3 years, the two slaves ran away, and your slaves are in Gath, it was reported to him. So immediately, see, he arose. Now, because of this time, did he say, oh, Solomon, you know, he's busy as a king in the kingdom. He'll not remember this. I'm just, you know, one guy anyway, he won't remember. That's 3 years gone by. See, but money here, money is his folly. Shimei's folly is money. He's lost money here when these slaves leave him. So he went to Gath and he brought his slaves back from Gath. Verse 41, Solomon was told, Solomon's got his spies, his informants, as the king would in all the kingdom, you see. And shouldn't it be that the king would probably know more than the, you know, the guy on the street, you see, on all the issues that take place. And Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and come back. So the king sent immediately, called for Shimei, said to him, did I not make you swear by the Lord and warn you that the day you leave, you'll surely die? And you said, the word I've heard is good. So why have you not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I gave you? He broke the oath of the Lord and the king's commandment. One and the same. King said, moreover, to Shimei, you know your heart acknowledges all the wickedness you did to my father David. Therefore, the Lord will return your wickedness on your own head. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, he shall reap. What's the reference? Anybody? Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, that you shall reap. Galatians 6, 7. He went out and he lost his head, struck him down and he died, verse 46, and the kingdom was established. So, what I've put down here then is the folly of each of these men. And then, by way of application here, I want us just to consider here, and this has struck me in the study here, is what is our temptation to folly? What is our temptation to folly? Now, everyone here in the congregation knows that at one time my temptation to folly was fishing. I would go fishing at the drop of a hat anytime, all the time. Even got so bad that at one time I told Nance, you take the children, you go to church. I got to go fishing because, you see, it's going to freeze up here shortly and I won't be able to put the boat in the water anymore. You can rationalize anything, see. And it got so bad, that temptation to folly. So we ask ourselves, what is our temptation to folly? And this is interesting because, you see, is Jesus Christ and his kingdom first? Jesus doesn't want second place, and he doesn't want us to be in something else in competition with him, whether it's our job, whether it's our fishing or, you know, hobbies, whether it's our family or, you know, you name it, anything. I mean, it's different for these men, and it's different for us. But Jesus wants first place, first in everything. And to know that, it struck me. So some of us here now, you know, you're working, whatever, you got your job, you get your paycheck. Is that your paycheck? See? How do you look on everything that you have? You go and buy a new car. Is that your car? See? Or do you acknowledge that everything you have is from God and he's over everything? It's his. Think of 1 Corinthians 6:19-20. What know not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which you have of God, and what? You are not your own. You're bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and your spirit, which are God's. You're not your own. You're bought with a price. You're a bondslave of King Jesus. He's the master. You're the bondslave. We all are. We don't have an agenda of our own. We're not supposed to have a will of our own that puts our will above God's will. We exist to please Jesus. I delight to do your will, O God. Your law is within my heart. I'm seeking to love Jesus with all my heart, soul, and mind. You see, it's relevant to us. It's easy for us to look at these men, and you see, and then a temptation. Everyone, the devil would know where our soft spot is. The devil will know where our soft spot is. And he'll dangle that carrot before us. And then we start to rationalize. Remember I told you my experience when I was at the garden business. And the Lord struck me. I've got to put the Lord's day first. Got to do that. Do you remember the story? I rationalized and said, well, I'll put the Lord first from the time we leave for Sunday school and then the worship services and that. So what do? I go out at 6 o'clock in the morning because I'm going to work until we go to Sunday school, and I still just allow a little time for, you know, to get dressed up and that, see, cleaned up. So I go out, and the first thing I do, first thing in the morning, I look, and I saw this rock, and it was about this big. It wasn't that big a deal. And I bent over like this, and my whole back went out. And you looked at me, and I looked exactly like this. I'm not kidding. It was like, you know, you kick me out, you're here, and then all of a sudden the rest of them's over here. I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything. My first reaction was what? Lord, you got my attention now. You got my attention, see. I was trying to rationalize here, and it ended up nothing but folly. See. The Lord's day, it's his day. It's not for working in my garden business. So, Nance and I had told you just to finish the story. We went on a convention. We were supposed to be down in Iowa. I couldn't even get out of the car to pump gas. I got out of the car and I went like this along the car and I tried to get the thing and I couldn't, and I stood there like this. She had to get out of the car and pump the gas. We were supposed to go on bus tours and all that. I couldn't even lift my leg to get up on the steps. I had to have people help me up the steps. And that went on for days. The Lord got my attention. Never did that again. Never. I didn't want to try it again. Who knows what he'd do the next time, see, to get my attention. Now, but see, we all run into those kind of situations. We're not our own. Everything that we have is his. Sometimes Pastor Ryan and I will pray, remember? James 1:17. Every good gift is from above. Every good gift. And 1 Corinthians 4:7. You know, who makes you to differ from another? And what have you that you do not receive? And when you did receive, why do you boast as if you didn't? Everything that we have is ultimately from God. See, the shirt you're wearing right now, you see, the clothes you're wearing, everything, ultimately from God. Is that our mindset? See, is that our mindset? The character of God's kingdom demands total allegiance. God's kingdom, and this is true of King Jesus also, demands from us total allegiance. Is that how you spell allegiance, Nance? Looks fine. Thank you. Okay. I thought of Exodus 20, verse 3. First commandment is what? Don't all speak at once. First commandment. What? Oh, thank you. Good. Did you know when they take a poll, you've probably heard me say this before, when they take a poll in America on professing Christians on the Ten Commandments, do you know how many they can name on the average? Two. Two out of the ten. Test yourself sometime. How many can you name out of the ten? Okay. Exodus 20, verse 3. You shall have no other gods before me. You see? Total allegiance. Jesus and his kingdom is first. So think of the first commandment. The first commandment teaches us monotheism. Okay? What's monotheism? Anybody? Mono is, and theism? God. One God, right. Monotheism, one God. One God. We can turn any of these things, you see, into gods. Competing gods. Monotheism. It also, then, is ultimate allegiance. Now, as U.S. citizens, you know, we are citizens of two kingdoms, right? God's kingdom comes first. We're citizens of America. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. There's an allegiance there to that. I always get it, you know, is there a penalty for burning the flag? Is there a penalty or not? Is it just freedom of speech and expression? To me, anybody that burns a flag should be penalized. You know, allegiance to your country, see? Allegiance first to God, but there's allegiance to the country. Right?
Yeah, I know. Well, in the
that's right. Yeah. We've been at the citizenships, and when they take their oath, you see, is they write in their citizenship oath, they renounce all former allegiances, the governments where they come from, and then they pledge allegiance to the United States. Yeah. Okay. Well, I got something to protest to then. Okay. And the last thing here is exclusivity. Exclusivity. We know that from salvation, Acts 4:12, neither is there salvation in any other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. And Jesus said, John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and life. No one comes unto the Father by me. There's exclusivity throughout the Bible when it comes to Jesus and that. But it's the same thing here. This is our allegiance and one God all tied together there, the first commandment. So what did Jesus, when he came, did he swear his allegiance to God's kingdom? Did he act that way? Think of Jesus when he came, John 6:38. I did not come to do my own will, but the will of my Father in heaven. John 4:34, the verse of contentment for Jesus. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. And then John 8:29, the Father who sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone. I do always those things that please him. See, Jesus put God in his kingdom first in all things. And he calls us to do the same. Our minds, our hearts, our bodies, our wealth,
Everything. So that's the test for all of us. Is any of this folly of these enemies, is that a temptation of ours? Is that a temptation of ours? And do we really put Jesus and his kingdom first?